Good morning. Welcome to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike, and Tommy's children. I hear little ones in the background screaming for joy.
That's why I'm laughing, man.
No, yeah. It's screaming for joy because the Explicit Measures.
The show's starting.
It's starting. Dad's on YouTube again.
Happy Tuesday, kids. Happy Tuesday.
Oh, so you're, by the way, you're streaming 103, 104, so we'll edit them in the pod.
We'll edit in the wrong description, apparently.
Seriously? Also, so all the folks on 103 need to move over to 104?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, geez. This is what happens when you show up in 2 minutes.
Yeah. It was a long weekend, I guess. And, yeah, things are busy these days. Anyways, hopefully people will find us. On the wrong day. Anyways, well, good morning, everyone. How's it going today? Any news or updates?
Well,
from
you just blew my intro. Like all these folks, seven folks, are just like hanging out on the wrong
channel
stream. Like, hang on, I'm so discombobulated. I need to find the place too.
Is it my fault or is it the fact that the streaming program I use is not good? Maybe we need to move platforms to a different streaming plugin.
No, it's not your fault, but it's just like you don't get your enough discovery information.
Exactly,
so
right.
Someone else's.
It's so, not the requirements weren't there initially. This the stupid thing moves around.
You know, I think that you just wanted the nostalgia to go into every 100 episodes, and you're starting off real early. Like in the first 100, it was episode 84, right? That was the missing episode. Yep. Now apparently it's 103. That we're gonna have to go back and figure out how to sort through
the mystique now of what happens.
I think the vast majority of folks are in the right place now. For those of you listening on the voice only, you can just reminded that we're technology challenged folks.
Tommy will add this out. We can fix all this in post.
We know data well.
Everything else, not so much.
Yeah, for those wondering,
we've only been doing this for like a couple episodes,
almost
right?
A year now.
Like, yeah. Oh, geez.
For those wondering, why don't they have their stuff together by now? Don't. And also, we are a business intelligence podcast, but apparently, we can't count.
Yeah.
Up,
so. Yeah. So for those of you who joined us on 103 and popped over to 104, it was a fantastic intro. Tommy's kids were screaming for joy in the background. I threw out my Happy Tuesday, kids. Happy Tuesday. And here we are. You're all caught up.
At least someone's excited to hear us.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
Like I said, they referred. I always ask who's that whenever it's on. And it's Uncle Mike.
Uncle Mike.
I don't know why.
That is right.
It's great. So
it is great.
And Seth is just a little harder to say. She can say it, but as you can tell, it takes a lot of energy out.
Yeah, but it's, do I get a cute name or is it like Speth?
Kind of like that, yeah. So it's
nice.
It's just a lot of work for her, so she's just like.
I think originally when my kids like were finally able to grasp language a little bit, my name is Seth. And they just stared at me, and that was the end of it.
That was
like,
it,
Dad. Like, yep, okay,
that works. It's always weird though when your kids trying to get your attention, and they go from Dad to Mike. Or Michael.
You don't
do that.
All right.
You don't do that. You call me Dad.
So you're on a different age bracket.
We're starting a different age bracket now. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes, we're having to wake people up for school because if we didn't, they would sleep in past it a little bit now. So we're getting to that point now, but it's good.
Yeah.
Keeps us on our toes, that's for sure.
Right
well,
on.
Speaking of all things that we're not good at, data silos is another thing that companies are not good at. And today's topic is around what are data silos and how can we use Power BI to break down the barriers between some of these data silos? I think in general, I mean, even looking at one of the announcements, actually, this probably ties in fairly well. If you look at the Power BI blog, I think it was today, April 25th, no, yesterday. Yesterday, an announcement was made for Analyze and Excel workbooks are now saved to OneDrive for Business by default. So kind of when you, if you have a data model, you can open that, click a button inside the data model inside PowerBI.com. And by default, you now get an Excel sheet that's connected to that data model, but done so already in OneDrive in the cloud, which is interesting. It also makes it, I think, a little bit more less friction for sharing. But yeah, it seems like sharing in the cloud is where Microsoft is pushing a lot of their products, and maybe that will be part of our, you know, talk around here around what data silos are and how we can potentially start eliminating them. So let's just kick it off with what is data silos, Tommy? Give us your kind of you know, what does in your mind does a data silo mean to you?
Honestly, there's two kind of situations where I would really put this bucket of data silos. I think one is really system space, where you have an organization, a team, et cetera, whatever the your scenario is, that there's competing systems. You have Power BI. Maybe you've launched it, you've had it for a while, but there's something, there's some legacy systems in that have been there and that will always continue to be there. Whether it's a CRM system that has, you know, some a bar chart, but it's what people rely on, or that's in a sense where the calculation is going.
Okay.
Maybe it's Salesforce. I think the other, and that it just trying to compete with, hey, look at our reports, look at what we're trying to build. But no, we can see it in the source, and that's being relied on. And then the other kind of side of this is there's a lot of times too, we have Power BI, it's great, everyone loves it. Oh wait, we're bringing in this other system and that's going to have its own reporting. Okay, how's that going to mesh with what we already have?
Sure, exactly, and right.
What can you do? So those are kind of the two kind of at least introductions that I'll say to when I think of data silos.
And Seth, what would you, maybe for your perspective, you have anything different to add there that you would think flavoring data silos? How would you lens that for yourself?
In general, what they are, right, is silos of information,
yeah,
in an organization, which typically spread across different business units or departments, right? Like people start doing their own thing that doesn't tie into, you know, other systems, or there's a number of different factors of like why,
sure,
or how silos start. But ultimately what it is, you know, it's a team, it's people within an organization either not knowing or not having access to data that they could use to help, you know, make decisions within a business.
And sure,
I think we'll talk in at length about the bad of them, why you don't want to them, you know, want them, some of the factors involved in, you know, why they spring up. But I'm sure we all have examples of beautiful situations that we've walked into in the past where, you know, they're detrimental to a company overall.
Sure. I would, maybe I'm going to talk to the point of like why the data silos start showing up or what happens. Cause I guess I've been through a number of parts of
sure.
companies where I've observed why they appear, right? So why mm-hmm. do some of these data silos appear? Cause there's this concept of like, so Tom, you gave some really good examples here, like the CRM system or Salesforce system, right? There's different mechanisms that a business uses to collect or aggregate information or data about what they're doing on the day-to-day basis. Salesforce may be collecting leads or, you know, doing something with sales. You can even run your website through Salesforce. You can have your customers right. log in through Salesforce. There's all kinds of really interesting things Salesforce does and integrates with your application. But when I think about it, there's usually like other areas of the business, and each team needs like a different set of tooling to some degree, right? If you're in the sales and marketing channel, right, there's usually a set of tools that you use to go get information from. That could be Google Analytics. That could be some kind of marketing platform like a MailChimp or something. You're sending out emails to those things. Those systems by themselves collect and aggregate data for you in their little process. But I think the data silo stuff starts popping up when you start looking at across the organization. Almost every department has something that's potentially customized to them. And for me, the challenge becomes, all right, I've got six different applications that are running in different areas of the business, and all of them are creating their own data, and there's no central place to put everything. And there is a level of effort here that is required to say, is the lemon worth the squeeze to go grab what relevant data you need and stick it in the common location for people to analyze? So I think you're going to, for me, that's kind of how I see this forming, right? Someone has a need. They go find a program, they get funding. Yes, we're going to go purchase this. Boom, they buy the licenses, program's up and running. And so now you have this siloed piece of data. And when you buy these programs or you incorporate them into your business, you're not really thinking about the long-term, like, how do I get the data out of it? Where does it go? And so usually when I was on projects with Johnson Controls, when I worked for them, it was always around, okay, where does the data go? Like, how do I get the, like, I don't even care about your tool, really. Like, first question, how do I get data out? And if they start pointing to me to, well, here's a report area where you can build reports and then you can dump it to Excel. I'm like, that's not what I want. You need to show me, like, what's the connection string to the place where the data lives? Because once we have that, things get a lot easier, I feel like. And that allows at least less, more automation around moving that data silo into something that we could use for the organization. Anyways, just my perspective or my lens on what data silos are and how they form.
Well, I think you dove into kind of factors that create them.
Maybe, right? Maybe a little bit more like that.
Right. Because what is a data silo is in the organization.
Exactly.
But I think
right.
You dovetail on what I would kind of classify as two high level areas. One is there are factors within a company structure that kind of lend themselves to these things getting created, and probably like a couple points in like kind of company culture that allows some of that to happen, right? Like one of the things you drew on right away was kind of is the company set up in such a way, or is it large enough, right? Like I think really big companies by nature almost like have to go this route, and like I don't know, but like what I'm getting at is a centralized budget for software that the company wants to use across business units versus business units going and finding their own software and building their own things. Because ultimately with all of those choices, typically there are back ends to those, right? Different databases, different sources, different problems. Like you're saying, like, how do I get this data out? So if the organization is set up in such a way that there are no checks and balances around using certain platforms or certain programs so that integration can happen easily, I think you automatically find yourself in this situation where, there's this like finance uses their own special thing and they can't, you know, nobody can touch it. So I think that dovetails into like organizational structure and management of those key resources that are used within organizations. And then ancillarily, like another part of or factor that could create these silos outside of what you outlined in that bucket for me is like business growth, right? On the opposite spectrum, smaller companies that are rapidly growing or acquisition.
Acquisition.
So you're buying into a completely different framework.
You bought a data silo.
Whatever the case. right?
Yes, you're starting with it.
You
got
to figure out paths to get in there. So, like, those are the company structure ones that I kind of see. Tommy, what are your thoughts around
so
the factors that...
What you guys said, I love where it's going because it makes me think. I think there's kind of two types of silos that emerge. And, Mike, you really spoke to this, too, where I think there's organic silos where... Someone marketing has a new tool, and we've talked about democratized and commoditized data. Well, most tools, it's going to show you a bar chart if it has anything to do with data, if it's social media, or if it's, you know, something with Salesforce, it's going to show you some visuals. But that's more organic in terms of we didn't buy this, or we're not using, you know, our intention wasn't for this to be our source of truth. It just has pretty visuals. We don't know where the data is coming from. That's one way, that's something we can work with, I think, from our side. And the other one is structured silos, where, to your point, Seth, either finance is something in place, man-made, where this is what we are using, or some initiatives come in where, hey, there's a module in Dynamics, and this is where we're going to be looking at these numbers. Because Dynamics, you can just install it, and it shows you everything. And that's what's going to be used. So... those are very different use case situations on how we kind of go about it from a business intelligence point of view. Again, one is, you're just looking at these visuals. You didn't even know it was going to be there. Okay, we can work with that. Where's the data coming from? Let's integrate that. But again, then you have that other side where it's like, we know these numbers. We bought this tool or have this tool because it helps us show the data among other things.
You could build everything from scratch. Every tool that you needed, that would serve every purpose of your business, and then have all the data could go, you have control of the data, you know where everything goes, you can have all that sent to a place, a central, you know, a lake potentially, where everything lives, where you can pull all the data together. But I think what happens is there's these, call it, for lack of a better term, an accelerator, right? If I buy this thing off the shelf, it gets me like 90% of the way there. I don't have to build anything. I can just pay money and it solves some key challenges or issues or problems I'm having. And I think that whether you're acquiring companies, and someone else made another note here, they feel like they have data silos because they have four different BI tools.
And I have a whole other ball.
But I think about this, like, in order to consolidate things down, you need to have executive leader sponsorship to kind of, like, you know, centralize some of these things. And I think this is where part of your data culture comes into play here, or what executives are going to drive for a company. I was just talking with a friend of mine. She moved from one company to another, and in the first company, it was okay. You know, she was able to do analytical things for her team, was coming up with ideas, but it was a lot of politics, a lot of resistance to figure out how to leverage that data for the insights within the business. And then when she moved to her new company just recently, she's like refreshed, and she's like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. You know, executive leadership comes to me and says, what do you need? How do you want to take this data from these different sources and tell us what you want to shape? You come up with an idea, we'll build it, we'll go with it. So I think a lot of this level of siloing, we always come back to this. It's always a people problem at some point, right? There's a level of politicking that potentially happens within your organization to be able to get access to these datas, or, you know, have teams work between each other about using and leveraging more and more data. I just feel like it's part of the conversation. It's probably not the main part of this 100%. Conversation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, no, it totally is.
It can totally change things.
You know, in terms of other factors, right? Like, mm-hmm. like company structures, right?
Yes.
Like, you can do your own thing, whatever, but culture.
Yes.
Like, you hit the two main points that I was thinking about as well.
Okay.
One is governance.
Yes.
Right? Like, do you have some sort of data governance? Not to say that the business unit can't use their own software and tools, but does it integrate with the wider company goals of keeping data accessible to everyone?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And then the harder one that you just ended with, which is kind of how I would view, you know, do you have a culture that's open and collaborative?
Yes.
Right? Or have you created a culture where business units have different goals and priorities and budgets, and you're almost pitting them against each other to some degree, yep. where like they don't want to share their data.
Yep.
Right.
Potentially.
And that's what I like. You just described, at least in my mind, like that friend of yours, right? Moves mm-hmm. from one where it's very challenging, right?
Yep.
Like, you can't even have a conversation. It's with
pushing a rock uphill. Like, yeah.
No, man. You can't have access to that.
It's like, pushing a rock uphill versus, you know, you're running down the hill now. I mean, it's so much more effortless, and you can go, it feels like you can go much faster. And again, I think there's a culture part of this too. You know, and I also have observed in larger companies, it feels like there's more capability to build more data silos, because mm-hmm. if you look at the broader portion of the organization, it's harder to meet everyone's needs with a single IT group. And so what often happens is you don't move quick enough, and someone's like, I got to go. We got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. We got to move. We're going to buy this thing. We're going to go with it. It's going to work for us. And you figure out what you got to do. Again, this kind of feels in the same vein to me around what happens in Excel, why we see these massive Excel documents, or let's call these
access databases.
Access database. Like, same thing, right? It's right. Why do we see those things appear? Well, it's because of these needs that need to be met, but we don't have the ability, or the IT group can't come in and just solve them for us. So we just not cobble together. They're very well thought out, but these are very elaborate, and you have to be very technical. Sometimes I'm working with another person who's another client that's got like a really intense Excel sheet. It runs their business, but that's the tools they were given, and they're comfortable with those tools. So they're totally comfortable to make this very elaborate Excel thing. Now we're having to like figure out how to like simplify it, because it's so complex at this point. So these are the kind of challenges I think that you run into.
Yeah, you can. I think we've actually had some shared experiences about how deep into the rabbit hole you can go with people just figuring out solutions because of IT challenges, right? I think the governance part to me would be enabling business units enough freedom to pick or use tools that will solve the immediate business goal, because you don't want to be a blocker. But at the same time, like, have some pretty hard curbs of like, hey, when we get around to it and we want to plug into here, these are the things this system needs to have if you choose it, right? Because there's always options, you know, for many different tools or, you know, things to, you know, utilize to help you get from point A to point B.
Yep.
But I guess, so we've kind of covered, like, outlined what a data silo is, some of the factors in creating them, but why are, like, in your analysis, like, what are some of the reasons why they're bad, right? Like, what are the impacts to the organization?
I like that. That's a good transition part here.
So an interesting story on that, where the problems arise, and I'm going to emphasize again that we cannot underestimate where we are with technology now, where I think any technology or product that from marketing or sales that they're going to use or purchase, whether it's a Microsoft product or not, has more and more ability to build their own, in a sense, visuals or something pre-baked in, which for a user kind of reduces the need for, like, well, why do I have to wait 2 weeks for this to go into a report? It's right here and it's pretty and I can customize it myself. But the problems arise where, just an example, I was dealing with a client where they wanted to look at their Dynamics marketing data. They just switched to Dynamics marketing. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, where does this exist? And I kid you not, there's like Microsoft, here's a template you can download.
Yep.
Like, great. And you download it. Like, oh, by the way, you need a Azure Blob storage and you need to set up all these things. And when you actually download the template, this is from Microsoft. This is not someone else's solution. It was 76 tables that were loaded with probably one of the worst model that I've ever seen. And just what it was trying to show. And we looked at this, me and someone else, and our jaws were on the ground. Like, how do we make sense of this? The way this was actually created. And Dynamics does not play well with Power BI, which I don't know why. And with more and more people going to that, and Dynamics is like, oh, you can make every Power BI report in Dynamics, or we have all these modules for visuals. There's a competition there, and the problems that arise where, like, hey, no, Dynamics has it, and we can trust it because it's, you know, it's their thing. It's not anything custom in their heads. And the problems then are, it's just the lack of trust. One, why should I rely on your report? Because they're both showing me to a user the value of they're both showing me the same bar chart, right? Like, both of them can build a bar chart. You just take longer to do, and I can customize this. So why do I need to go to more tools? So because we just increase those barriers. And then what happens is this competition for what to look at, the value of what's the source of truth, and then really what you can do and integrate moving forward.
I totally agree with these things. And I think when I start thinking about organizations, what challenges that these things cause, I think, Tommy, you speak to this a lot about the challenges that you face, is there's potential here for multiple stories of the same truth, mm-hmm. or different ways people are monitoring things, or, you know, there's always it comes down to something like, there's always a cost implication that's coming along here. So even if I go out and make my own data silo, whatever that is, there's a cost to integrate that into what our normal platform is. And to your example around Dynamics, right? So Dynamics is essentially just a list of tables that have kind of like a structured way of things inside those data tables. And when you look at, how do I articulate this? The Dynamics system is basically the same information for every company. Microsoft has tried to make, like, mm-hmm. this generalized schema of, you have customers, you have products, you have these things that you do, and they're very here's the common names of stuff. What Microsoft would like you to use is, Dynamics is meant to work with, I think, Dataverse is what their back end mm-hmm. kind of piece is, which that is supposed to be easily integratable into Power BI. So it's this concept, well, it's supposed to be, right? I didn't say it was.
Yeah.
It's this concept of, you know, hey, we've got this information, right? How do we expose not only the front end, because the front end of Dynamics really feels like Power Apps. Here's Power Apps on top of everything. You can make these easy, like, you take these tables of data, let's turn them into an application view that I can just go modify and edit or change data. Like, that's what you want to do. It's a real-time interface to that that Dynamics portal. And then on the backside, you just have all these tables and information that's stored behind the scenes that you can go shape, use, modify. And Microsoft, I think, wants you to take the Dynamics environment, and there's these integrators or things that you can integrate with, right? Take Dynamics, mm-hmm. you have the finance and operations side of it, but you're using Salesforce. Well, there's these templates that translate all the columns of Salesforce into Dynamics things. So you can take these other sources of information and try and bring them all together. That is an expensive approach to data warehousing, because you don't get to play with any of that stuff until you like turn on Dynamics. And I think there's companies would definitely say they found value from Dynamics and having that be your data warehouse. But anytime for any silo, regardless, there's always a cost to bring the data out and centralize it. And so I think this is where I'll play some more of that politics game. Is the lemon worth a squeeze? Are companies willing to put the effort in to go take those other systems and merge stuff together? Because that's expensive. I mean, even acquiring companies, when you acquire a business, there's a whole bunch of systems that come along with them that you either use them as is, or you migrate them to something new, or bring them into the new ecosystem. And that's challenging. It's not cheap or easy to do that. But the company has to decide if that's right. Because if not, then you're going to have to do financial reporting across two systems and merge data together. All these other things. So anyways, it's just...
Yep.
That's what I would probably point out as my, you know, why does it cause challenges? It causes challenges because you have to incur extra cost to bring it together now.
And that raises a really good point. And I think also to Seth, your question, that the underlying point of this is, well, both of them build a bar chart. Yeah. But at some point, you're going to want to integrate this in the rest of our data. Also, without that ability for us to integrate it, we're not just coming to you and frustrated because we can't build a bar chart in Power BI out of this. That's correct. Not the point here.
Yes.
The point here is you're dealing with different columns now and different attributes that do not match with our master data. Yes. Where we say, what's the member type, or how do I identify the geographic region? All these things that integrate allow us to use Power BI to its potential, where I can pull from all these sources and create one source of truth. Well, now the more you deal with this other system that can build the same bar chart, well, can only do it in that system. And then the longer and longer you wait to try to integrate that, the more complex that trying to match or integrate your master references, or how do we actually classify things? And that's really the true problem here. I forget. And then when they say, why can't you build that bar chart? It's like, you're not using anything that the rest of the business is, or at least our system.
So what's interesting to me, and Mike, I'm gonna poke into you for a little clarification, right? Like you get dovetailed into a specific Dynamics situation where we're talking about the integration challenges and costs, but in reality, in order to get rid of data silos, like that is the cost. You have to build integration pipelines or correct. Methods from those sources into a centralized repository.
A thing, yes.
So the thing that you outlined as like a bad thing is the thing that you have to do.
Well,
it?
I don't know. So I think what Tommy's speaking to, there's a couple other, I think, factors at play here, right? So Dynamics could, anytime you want to bring all the data together for reporting, there's potential trade-offs for what you're doing. For example, like let me give you an example of this one. If, to Tommy's point, right, maybe you're using Dynamics and you're using some other marketing program for tracking emails, you know, MailChimp, something like that, right? There's integrators that let those things easily talk together and you can bring the data in. But to Tommy's point, if campaigns aren't named the same way, if users aren't named the same way, if there's data in that source system that comes into your lakehouse or your Dynamics that doesn't match, there always seems to need to be this layer of like transformations. You know, taking this data that's in like different forms a little bit, and then like to Tommy's point, like we have master product data that may not come in clean every time. And so there has to be some sort of cleaning or cleansing. And this is where, you know, call it Dynamics, call it like, you know, I'd like to call it more like the lakehouse architecture, right? You're going to go get that information, you're going to bring it somewhere, and there has to be some sort of like, here is our master data. This is what we say it is. Someone's got to define what this information is. And when data comes to us that doesn't meet that, clean it or kick it out or make someone fix it or whatever that is. Like,
so that's
expensive. That's the integration.
It is, but that's what we're saying you should go through.
I think it. No, I think, but not every. Yeah, I wouldn't say every time though. I probably. No. Yeah. I was going to say it's kind of. It depends, right? Is the value from the information that you're pulling forward into that going to be?
So that I agree with,
like,
right? Like
yes.
Like why boil the ocean, right? If you're a company that has challenges with data silo, am I saying like take all of your data out of all these places and mash it together? Like no, because that's a significant
cost.
Effort
yes,
to do huge what you're cost. Talking about, which is create master data across an organization. Right. I think, but the integration costs of some of those things that do make sense, you still have those same challenges, right? You're still trying to solve, I guess, where I was going with why are data silos bad, right?
Yeah.
You both touched on a couple things. Okay. One is I think ultimately where we come into this is it's likely going to create a negative or bad customer experience with reporting, whether that's internal or external. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have problems if you try to start branching different areas of data from both of these silo things. And the great thing about Power BI is, hey, guess what?
Yep.
We can plug into all those systems.
Sure.
We can mash it all together in Power Query.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean it matches something else in the org. Right.
And that's not your data. Like don't use Power BI as your data warehouse. Don't call it a data warehouse. It's not. Like
in those regards, it's like it's a great first draft of like, hey, we can do this with data. It's really cool. And to your point, Mike, you also said inconsistent outcomes, right? But I think there's a lot more to it just in the data realm of why they're bad, right? Because they overall can create incomplete views of the business in the different departments, right?
Ooh, yep.
You have data accuracy problems, like we just talked about. Duplication of data. So Mike, you talked about integration costs, but there's wasted storage costs. Like how, especially with the volumes that we see, if you have two areas of the business collecting the same information,
very true.
Like you could be spending a ton of money.
You could be processing the same data.
The same.
Right. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. You could process the same master data twice. I mean, you see this all the time in Power BI models. Hey everyone, here's our lake. We have product master data, and then everyone goes create a model and says, okay, we're going to import the entire master product data every day for every model, instead of thinking about like, is there a more efficient way of doing this? Should we like incremental refresh this stuff? Can we have something that doesn't have to have that table loaded every single time you hit refresh on the report? It just adds load to the system at some point, and maybe that's not always the most efficient way of going about it.
So I don't know if this is always the case, but I think there's always going to be some cost for integration. But the thing is, the longer you wait, systems change behavior. It's okay for a company to use a system, but if they're using their system that's completely siloed or separate from our, you know, ability to communicate with our source of truth, that's going to change behavior. Behavior changes culture. So if you have a company who's using their own new system, right, and it's completely, you know, unlinked, broken from your actual, you know, centralized how we identify things. Well, again, all these tools, not only can you, in a sense, see a pretty bar chart, but like, hey, create a custom field or, you know, update this information. And now there's almost two cultures, I'll call them like mini cultures, that are being created where they have this own world, their own little data society, so to speak, in this system. That they're reporting like, hey, we created this one thing for, you know, now looking at customer type and we identify it this way, but it's only happening in that system. And if that can't speak to your warehouse or your lake house, you have no way to map it back to the source or your source of truth. So when that time does come, the longer you wait, there's no like, okay, how are you identifying a customer or where is this coming from? How do we actually integrate this with our actual customers, which is where we run into, I think, the true problems. Your company's going to have systems. That's obviously okay. And that's always going to happen. But if we're not involved with that story from the beginning to say like, okay, let's look at what this, whatever we're bringing in is, how can we map it to what we already have to, so it can play nice and communicate with it. Then the cost is still, there's still a cost, but it's minimal. And I think that's a natural progression. The longer we wait,
You raise a very interesting point, right? Because if we back up to the beginning of the conversation, right? Like Mike, you were saying, business units need to move fast. They need to, you know, find software that solves their problems, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, without a little bit of forethought by an organization, whether in governance, whether checks and balances of who's buying what software, mm-hmm. what that eventually, that fast thing to fix that need is a much slower, like a slowdown
somewhere
as it
else.
Relates to,
yes.
Yeah, like a really key insight that your organization needs, right, in your reporting, Tommy, right? Like how do I access the data? How do I pull forth that information? Because I need to create this high-level executive KPI, and I can't do it because I can't get at your system, right? So how do I do that? And that's where I think when you run into this situation that things slow down because you didn't have the collaboration, right, within the organization, whether that's culturally or structurally, that created this issue that we're dealing with.
This is interesting because I feel like this is bringing up to me like some points here. Like, I mean, if I look at the trajectory of where data and things are going, right, everyone is spinning, like more and more data is being generated all the time, period. That's just a fact. You know, all the devices that are on the internet, so the websites that are running, there's more and more data being generated quicker than ever before. So if you think about the increasing volume of data, and then I think about what you just said there, Seth, from a, you know, you're by getting these off-the-shelf solutions that are providing fast value right now, there needs to be at least a consideration for it. I'm not saying don't do it. I think there's definitely a place and time to do these kind of things, but there needs to be someone thinking with a, okay, just we need to know the data's around. The data's there. We're using this system. You know, taking inventory of where things are, and then potentially looking at, larger companies start talking about like who, what will they allow you to buy? What software will they let you get or not get? Or, you know, you may be buying an off-the-shelf software piece that the company already has. They've already purchased something somewhere else that you could just use or get licensing for. But someone needs to kind of step in and be able to talk to that point around all those elements to make sure you don't slow down the business long term, right? I think that's a really valid point, is like the speed you get now by getting a program that works today potentially causes pain points in the future when you want to get it back out.
So you really just hit on something for me, Mike, where the more I'm thinking about this, where again, it's okay to have the systems and even people using it, but
yep.
The problem's really right where there's always a grow up story. I think any system, especially if it's a structured one where finance is using it or sales or what have you, eventually there's going to be a point where the company, the team is going to want to integrate that with the rest of the information at the company. Like, we've been using this, but you know what would be really great? We have all these events that go on. Well, we're going to create a lead scoring with events or, you know, et cetera. So, hey, we need to put that, you know, integrate that whether into the system or into a report. The longer you wait, where all of a sudden we come in and we're trying to make sense of not just the, you know, like the structure of the data, but maybe sometimes the logic, like, well, wait, how'd you get that? You know, like, where did that come from? They're like, oh, well, we input that. There's no logic. There's no way to automate that or in a sense scale that. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problems arise, where there's no thinking of the grow up story, when eventually someone's going to want to see this integrated again, not just into a report. And I think we need to get outside that box, but they want that to be able to talk to their system too.
Yep.
So both of those arise where if we're not involved, because I think a lot of times too, I try as much as I deal with this, where I don't want to be the one going, no, it should be Power BI because that's what I do. You know,
yep.
It's like, and that's not the point, is I know you're going to want this soon, you know, like sooner rather than later, or at some point you're going to want to see this with everything else that we have. Because this,
agreed,
for you eventually cannot be siloed yourself.
Yep. Yep.
And the sooner we're here, we can understand your logic and the steps, and we can scale it.
So maybe I'd like to, you know, I think we've kind of beat up the challenges. We've kind of beat up like the definition. I'd like to kind of like maybe a couple thoughts here on, you know, how do you guys see two things, right? One, how does Power BI fit into this data silos thing? What does that look like for you? And then maybe my second question after that, we talk about maybe what do we see are some of the advantages of removing these data silos for companies, and maybe how do you start that? So maybe let's talk first about Power BI and, hey, how does Power BI address this data silos issue? What do we see from the tooling that's provided to us? Where does that sit into this ecosystem?
I think the one that stands out to me is the one I think is one of the most powerful features of Power BI compared to any other tool, is it has the ability to show the business what improved visibility across different data silos could look like, right? Like if you think about the key pieces of information that you may need out of these different silos and you're able to marry those up, not only can you likely connect directly from this desktop tool, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. If you get access, you can merge, like do the ETL within the tool, right? To prove out the capability, mm-hmm, that we can do this.
Yep.
And merging IDs together, or making, you know, at least a 80-20 kind of report where, yep, it's like, hey guys, like look at the value of what I can do in this singular report and produce for you. And if like those are the show me the value of what this could look like. And then that leads to an investment in integration and effort, because there could be like that proves out the point that the data from these disparate parts of the organization, when melded together for certain metrics or certain views of the business, mm-hmm, to make decisions based on data, as opposed to, you know, what somebody thinks over here and what somebody thinks over here, and they're looking at two different data sets, can do for an organization. I think just that proving out and showing people that is the biggest thing.
I'd agree with that one.
That's a fun one, because it's almost where you can call it introducing Power BI whiteboard, where Power BI can almost be a proof of concept. And I've used this extensively.
Yeah. 100%, which is why I say, like when people go, yeah, well, don't like think about this solution not with Power BI. I'm like, well, you can't, right? Like all these other BI tools don't do what this singular thing lets me do. So I know you don't want to have a tool thing, but I'm saying I'll do this, but I have to use this tool.
Right. And it makes you think in a way, in a true data model sense, where you need to be able to think of this end to end. And I think that's what I love that, Seth. And that's, I think what I hate, what people consider Power BI, not just from a consumer point of view, but I think again, the way it's marketed, where it's a visual solution, it's a reporting tool. That's scratching the surface, where with the Tabular model, you can integrate with the sources and try to say, this is what we're trying to do to scale this, create this model, and say, we need to obviously build that in the, you know, in the lake house, but that story is easy, or in a sense, if you can build it in Power BI, where it makes sense, there's a roadmap, and it forces you as the, you know, business intelligence to not think of yourself as I'm building visuals, but you're thinking of this as a system, and how does everything talk to each other? Yes. How does everything, automate together and work together? And you have to, if you're going to deal with the tool, you can't just, let me just get a bunch of Excel, you know, because of how the engine works. And that's from a solution point of view. It's like, okay, you have these systems. This is all the transformations we have to do. However, if we can integrate this, we can, theoretically, here's a proof of concept. Here's how it can talk with our sale, our e-commerce numbers. Oh, now you can actually combine that with our email marketing and our lead scoring to actually create an amazing measure for you. But in order for us to do that, here are the steps that need to be done.
So we talked earlier around, I like the idea that you guys called it a POC. So one of my points here is, In order to vet, is the lemon worth a squeeze? You know, is the value in the information, right? Sure. This is Power BI kind of comes in. There's like four key parts to Power BI I kind of want to speak to. One is Power Query, which is going to get the data, connecting to it. And then there's the analysis services engine, which is the modeling, mm-hmm, portion. Then there's the report building portion. So where you're creating visuals or tables of information or whatever, you're taking that modeled information and using it for visualizing. I think most people that I talk to, 75, 80%, maybe 90, think Power BI is only that. A report canvas where I drag and drop fields and make visuals. And then there's the last part of Power BI that I would say it's like the sharing mechanism. It's the distribution model of that information. So when you put all four of those things together, other tools have those capabilities, but not all in one tool. Like you, if you go get Tableau, you have to pay money to get the visualization tool and more money to get the data engineering tool that they have added after Power BI had it so strong. So like when I look at all these other tools, they rely upon having a cube or having a data warehouse or having a SQL, so there's something supporting them. And to me, this is, in my world, I feel like this is the game changer. We've just taken the capability of Excel, the world's largest business tool ever, right? I mean, everyone knows how to use Excel to some degree. There's so many users there. You've taken something that is capable for business users, and I see Microsoft continually investing in simplifying and trying to make it more efficient and, you know, providing a tool that gives you full data engineering capability all the way up. You know, take what we've built in the business, hand it over to an IT professional, and they can use the same tool to build really strong, powerful things that grow up with the organization. Now, I would very much echo that we never want to call Power BI a data warehouse, but the data modeling aspect definitely can become a data mart. I think Power BI and the analysis services models that are produced act like data marts to various topics or subjects or matters that are inside the business that are important to people. So yeah, I 100% agree. I think it's a very, it's lightweight. It's free. You can go download it. You can start engineering things like right away, immediately. So the friction or the barrier to entry is extremely low and the capabilities of the tool are extremely high. So so good.
Think about the business proposition right here, which is what this tool allows you to do, and we're in the context of data silos, but what you're pitching is I want you to go invest in a lot of integration costs and a centralized platform for like core data within the system. Like that requires lots of time, lots of money to do, but you have a free tool that lets you show business value.
Correct.
Of what that could look like in the future.
Exactly.
And
right.
I think like that alone, like is like, that's what you want.
People don't
like,
know what they want.
I'm proving my point.
Yes.
By doing this, like in a small subset of way.
Exactly right.
To show you this one thing that you keep asking for and the organization can't provide. Like that's a win of how do you get into this arena of getting rid of data silos. I think
this is one of the techniques I've used to help drive adoption initially into companies. One of the things that I did in my very early days working with Power BI was I used it Power Query in Excel. I mean, it's the same thing. Power Query, the analysis services engine inside Excel, rating, basically building pivot tables, but it's the same pattern, right? Hey, we need all this new data. It's coming from the customer. Great. What do we do with it? Okay, IT, start a project. Okay, it's going to take us 6 months. Shoot, we can't wait that long. Let's build our own thing. And so we build our own thing and we kind of like stitch all the data together and here's what we need to do. Here's how we need to report it. Like, you know, we can do this, you know, okay, IT, here you go. Here's the output of what we produced. And the fact that people see the ease of which you can do that data engineering and modeling all in one tool now allows people to say, okay, I see the value and the efficiency that's being produced from this. And so then the next project is a little bit easier to say yes to. The next project is a little easier to say yes to because you're seeing better results. The requirements gathering, I think, is... Well, regardless of what you're talking about, requirements gathering is hard. It's difficult, and people don't know what they want until they see it.
So, I think ultimately, did you want to touch on one more any Power BI stuff, Tommy? Or
so, just one quick thing. And again, I really think people, ourselves included too, we always talk about Power BI as the data application, but for a company or a user, our goal is not just to produce a really pretty bar chart. It's how does a company or leadership perceive Power BI and its role at the company? Is it just for visuals or is it that source of truth? And that's when it becomes a lot easier or harder, depending on where that value is at the company of if that's going to integrate. If we're using Power BI as our source of truth to report on our true metrics and our true KPIs at the company, then yeah, it's going to be a lot easier for us to tell that story. But if everyone just sees at the company as Power BI as this visual tool that helps me visualize data, then there's a lot more conflict. And I think there's that barrier to get this integrated is a lot harder. So part of our role with when we sell or pitch or show Power BI at a company is not just, oh, look at all the nice visuals that we have, mm-hmm. but it's putting that into that story of anything in here, we've verified it. This is our source of truth, and trying to sell it in that way.
There comes with a whole
you say source of truth, but like at the same time, I would interject that my how I look at Power BI as a problem solver for me in an organization has definitely changed over the years, probably mm-hmm. with role, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like if you can view, if you are solving a business problem with your report, or you're bringing visibility to a very challenging, disparate data, you know, source thing,
problem thing
in the report.
Yep.
It's not about source of truth, right? It's not about the visuals. You're solving a business problem.
Yes.
With the visualizations on a page, right? And in where Power BI shines in this is very large volumes of data, right? Simplified formats of display to show somebody, we have this question, or you have this question. This is the answer, or this leads to us understanding that by looking at data instead of somebody's intuition, right? And I think right. that's the value that you're going through in here to get rid of these data silos is first and foremost to improve visibility. And Power BI is a great way to do that because we've already, you know, talked about it. It's the only tool out there where you don't have to invest in more software to show value.
Correct.
Right. Yep. To a business.
Yep.
And this is a big effort to go through here.
Yep.
But at the same time, like the outcomes on the other side of not having or removing as many data silos as possible is that improved visibility, which you can prove out. Mm-hmm. Right. You can actually offer up better governed self-service. Right. That's have good. Yeah. other people. You're not the only person in an organization that needs access to this data.
Yep.
Right. So if you're creating a system that people know is there and they can access that same type of information, now you're enabling many other parts of the business to understand, like, or integrate better in with those overall data sets, right? And I think ultimately that just drives towards longer term efficiencies. And a thing we haven't talked about, which is kind of the data protection, right, of an organization.
I was just going to point that out.
You're centralizing that and definitely putting governance and data access controls around who should have access to that data, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a whole podcast in and of itself of like yeah. how much disparate sensitive company information is in Excel sheets, right? Like
yeah, that could be emailed around potentially at some level, right? Right? There's yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And you know, there's another part of this too that I don't think we have time to get into, but the idea is, you know, this is a managed service. This is a software as a service to some degree, or platform as a service. I don't know if it's a PaaS or SaaS, one of the, probably a platform as a service, but they're doing everything for you, right? Here's the program, build your models, put the models in this service, share the models, and all that's secured with Azure Active Directory. And before Power BI, before these things came out, you're buying hardware, you're buying a machine, a server, a something on-prem to go put reporting into. And now, what Microsoft is saying is like, look, we've moved
that's that. Another good point.
Yeah. We've shifted that entire mindset away. You don't have to procure hardware anymore. You can have, you know, with the right pricing in your organization, you can get almost unlimited scale with these models and things, or you can tune models and design these things. So there's a whole team of people that used to be in IT that can now shift away from maintaining hardware to focusing on adding value through data. And that, to me, that's a very big mind shift difference. And particularly, I think this is the role at which IT is playing now. Their role is less around creating and managing the infrastructure that supports the data. And they're moving more to how do we accurately govern and manage access to data? I think that's more the role that we see the IT professionals moving into. And one term I like to move away very much away from is less around IT and talk about governed data. Because I think if you say governed data only lives in the realm of IT, you shortcut yourself. Because I think you can govern data at the business level, at the IT level, at business unit level. I mean, there's a whole lot. Power BI gives a whole larger lens to how do you govern this information, and it doesn't have to be always managed by an IT organization anymore. They should definitely be involved in securing the information because that's important to the company. But do they need to own everything anymore? I don't think so. I think it's changing. So anyways, I know we're kind of at time now. People got to go do like real work things. So I think there's some really great points here. Love this conversation around data silos. Thanks everyone in the chat for kind of being very engaged and adding your experiences, your area. There's been some really good discussion in there. At the end of the day, I would say this. Push into Power BI. You know, if your company doesn't is loving data silos and they don't want to change, right? Invest in self, right? Invest in things that you need to learn. Invest in things you need to know about Power BI. Power Query is incredible. Learn about data engineering. Go grab data from different sources. And, you know, treat it like that proof of concept. Make yourself incredibly valuable in your company by upskilling yourself. That there's nothing that benefits anyone better. I'll tell this to new people. Only you can control the direction of your career. The company will never push you harder to get better. You have to push yourself harder and you have to set your own direction. I don't know where that came from. I got on a soapbox. I'm sorry. But thank you all very much for listening to the podcast. We appreciate your feedback. And on Thursday, we'll try and come back to episode 103 and fix that for you. So we're going to be out of steps here. This is going to make Tommy incredibly.
Can we just call us 103?
No, we're not. Everything's already published as 104. Data silos is 104. You're welcome, everyone. And I'm going to make Tommy. We're going to have fighting words with Tommy on Thursday when we do episode 103.
I'll be on the silo right here.
Oh, boy. Oh, I'll hit you in your data silo. Thank you all very much for watching. Our only ask is if you please share the podcast with someone else. If you got some value from this, if you found this was interesting to you, please share it with somebody else and let us know, on Twitter or LinkedIn and something like that. Let us know you enjoyed the podcast and tell a coworker that, hey, this was something valuable. Check it out. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
So if you're listening live, make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Overcast, anywhere podcasts are available. You can listen to all of our previous episodes. Make sure to leave a rating. And it really helps us out. If you're listening, join the conversation live every Tuesday and Thursday. Look on YouTube and LinkedIn, follow Power BI Tips, because you never know which episode's going to come up, but we will have the episodes there. So refresh your browser because we're always there. So just you got to be on your toes. That's what we like to do.
You know, so just gotta keep it exciting. We're just trying to keep it exciting. Thank you all very much. And we'll see you on Thursday.